What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 110. Today we're continuing our series on statins, so this is called the Statin Scam Part 2. In Part 1, we talked about the history of why people hate LDL, or also known as bad cholesterol, famously, and how that revolves around something called the diet heart hypothesis and why that science is all bogus, pretty much. So check back and listen to episode 109, or just part one of this series, just to get a framework of what we're going to be talking about today, because today we're going to be talking about really how statins work and just their mechanism of action and why they're so damn toxic, like why they're just, they really hurt us in so many different ways. And there is no article of the week this week, because if you go check out the post on the website, you'll see I have maybe like 20 articles linked already to this post. And because it's just all the studies I could find outlining, one, how statins work, and two, how bad they are for us. So there's already a ton of reading material if you're interested. So just go to tntwellnessandnutrition.com and check out those links, because like everything I always say, everything I always talk about, there is evidence supporting it, so it's on the website. So just a quick, I guess, summary, if you don't really know what statins are, they're a very, very popular medication used to lower someone's cholesterol. So if you go into the doctor's office and your cholesterol says, I don't know, 250, your LDL is over 200, most doctors are going to say, hey, we need to put you on a statin, which lowers LDL cholesterol or total cholesterol, and then supposedly reduces your chance of getting heart disease. And this is, I mean, God, this has to be one of the most popular medications out there, right?
If it's not the most prescribed drug, I think it's like at least top three. I think Lipitor is right there.
Lipitor, yeah, huge. Big money maker for the pharmaceutical company. And so let's just go over really the mechanism of action. So like I said, statins work by directly blocking the production of cholesterol in our body. And just remember, cholesterol is so important that our body doesn't leave it up to chance to get enough from the diet. So we make it ourselves. We all do. And that's technically why cholesterol is not an essential nutrient, because our body makes enough of it. But that's just because it's that important. And statins block the specific enzyme 8-MG-CoA reductase, and this will prevent your body from producing cholesterol. Actually, in a podcast a few weeks back, I said it blocks the enzyme 8-MG-CoA synthase, which is the one right before that, so I kind of had that wrong. Not that anyone noticed, probably, but I did. I said it, and I was like, that was wrong, but whatever. But, yeah, so that blocked your body's ability to produce cholesterol. And it doesn't affect, like, literally every cell in our body. If statins were that effective, they would kill you pretty much instantly. That's how important cholesterol is. But instead, it's more of a drawn-out death. Think of it like a slow poisoning. It really is. It's slow, slow. You don't feel it immediately, but it does take, like, age off your life. It really does. It's bad enough that statins block our ability to make cholesterol, since cholesterol is such an important makeup of every cell in our body. But what's often not talked about, enough at least in my opinion, is the fact that statins block a number of different intermediate molecules that are just as important as cholesterol. Because, like, cholesterol production in our body is fairly complex. It's a long series of enzymes. And it's not like 8-MG-CoA reductase is the last enzyme and then it makes cholesterol. It makes a whole bunch of different shit in between. And of course, if our body's creating these intermediates, it uses them for a process, for a purpose. And that's what we're going to go over first, what these things are. And this is one of the problems, I guess, of being self-educated or self-taught, is I do have like a formal education, like that's a backbone of this, but all this stuff I'm reading today, all these intermediate molecules, I've never actually had a teacher or anyone really speak them to me. I just read them. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to mispronounce all these things. So if somebody knows how to pronounce them and I like mispronounce them, I'm sorry, but I'm going to give it my best shot. And the first one I want to look at is something called isopentyl PP. And this eventually gets turned into glutathione in our body. And does glutathione sound familiar? We've talked about it before. That's a master antioxidant in our body. That does the bulk of the heavy lifting when our body is trying to deal with the damage done by free radicals. Like, you think blueberries are packed with antioxidants? Well, glutathione is like our body's own source of blueberries on steroids. So someone please explain to me how blocking glutathione production can be healthy.
No, it can't be. Like, that's why we recommend eating things like liver, bone broth, like meat, stuff like that. It's so you give your body a wide variety of amino acids so it can produce its own endogenous glutathione. That way, all the free radicals that are produced while you're exercising or just living, just producing energy in general, produces a bunch of free radicals. You need antioxidants available to deal with that damage, or else you're going to get things like cancer, diabetes, a whole host of other diseases just caused by way too many free radicals without the glutathione, the good guys there to help mitigate that damage.
Yeah, it's like, it's so basic. Like, this stuff is so basic. It's not that confusing, but no one talks about it. They just say statins and cholesterol and they forget about it. So statins lower our body's ability to produce glutathione, not a good thing. And here's another thing that isopentyl PP is used for, and you're going to love this, because remember, statins are touted as some cure-all for heart disease. So isopentyl PP is needed for our body to convert vitamin K1 to vitamin K2. And remember, K2 is important for preventing coronary calcification, aka heart disease. So vitamin K helps tell our body where to deposit calcium. So statins lower our body's ability to prevent calcification of our arteries. So how, again, is that a good thing? It can't be.
Yeah, and to even make that worse, so K1 is the form of vitamin K that's found in like plant foods such as like spinach and kale. K2 is what you're going to find in animal foods such as like butter and cheeses and stuff like that. So most doctors that are going to prescribe you a statin are also going to tell you to cut out dietary K2 and increase vitamin K1. So without this essential step, you're not going to be able to convert enough K1 into K2. So you're no longer consuming K2, and you're not going to be able to produce K2 from the K1. So this is another, like, just double whammy, basically, to give you more heart disease.
Dang, you know what? I didn't even think of that. Because, of course, that's step one. You damn butter, and you say eat margarine. Don't eat steak, eat fish. Like, you get, they're going to take away all your good sources of K2. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't even know of most doctors, because they don't really receive a good like nutritional background. When they hear vitamin K, I don't know if they even know K1 and K2, but they always recommend stuff like spinach and kale.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. So again, yeah, it's like a double whammy. It's horrible for our hearts. So this drug touted for its like magical benefits for heart disease creates coronary artery calcification. Not a good thing. Is there a study on the website showing it? Yes, there is. So please check it out. Okay, here's another thing that gets even worse. Statins block our body's ability to produce CoQ10. And we've talked about this molecule a lot in the past because it's that important. We have a whole podcast strictly on CoQ10. And this molecule plays a crucial role in every mitochondria in our body. And remember, mitochondria are just the powerhouses of the cell. They create energy in our body. And when levels of CoQ10 are low, our cells don't produce enough energy efficiently at all. Our cells have a bare minimum amount of ATP needed to live. If they don't hit this minimum energy threshold, the cell dies. And that, you know, that's common sense. And guess what cells in our body have the most mitochondria? That's right, heart cells. So how can lowering our heart's ability to produce energy help us prevent heart disease? Crazy, like this logic is just so backwards with statins, it blows my mind. And maybe this is why statins are linked to heart failure, something that we'll talk about next week.
I mean, yeah, that seems like a very logical conclusion. Like if you're preventing your heart cells, your mitochondria from producing more energy, yeah, like your heart's not going to be able to keep up. And not only does CoQ10 help cells produce energy, they also act as an antioxidant. Again, just similar like to glutathione, but CoQ10 acts as an antioxidant inside the mitochondria to deal with the free radicals as soon as they're produced. So it's kind of like our first line antioxidant when it comes to oxidative stress.
Yes, it is. Yeah, no, that's a super crucial point. And again, we're going to talk about all the side effects of statins in a couple weeks, so that's why this is kind of on my mind, but cancer is a huge one. And if you know, go back and listen to our Keto on Cancer podcast. We break down really the mechanism for cancer from, you know, as best we can. And one of, like Tom said, the greatest source of free radical damage in our body is literally in our mitochondria, complex 1 and 2 to complex 3 of the electron transport chain in our mitochondria. That is the biggest source of free radicals in our body. So that is the biggest area where we need antioxidants to mop up all that damage. And if you don't know, again, listen to the cancer podcast. I think we have more than two, we might have three at this point, but mitochondrial DNA isn't as protected as nuclear DNA. So it's really, really susceptible to damage. So we need CoQ10 there to help out with all this stuff to reduce damage. Because when our mitochondrial DNA gets damaged, you know what happens? Cancer. It's exactly what happens. And you'll see why statins cause cancer. Like, the links are so straightforward. If you understand biology at all, it's not that confusing. So, but of course, traditional doctors will say it's just not a thing. And they'll just kind of brush it aside that we don't know why people get cancer when they take statins. It's like, well, this is why, you idiot. You know, like, it's really not that confusing. But
they're too caught up with the whole genetic aspect of cancer.
Yeah.
Genetic theory.
Exactly. They're too caught up because they're like, yeah, statins don't mess with their genes. It's like, yeah, because you don't need to mess with their genes to cause cancer. But whatever. I guess that's a step too far for most people. Okay. Another thing that statins block our body's ability to produce is something called farcinyl-PP. And this eventually gets turned into a molecule called dolichol. And how would you pronounce that?
Farnesyl-PP and dolichol. I think, yeah, dolichol.
Dolichol? Right. Okay, yeah, because it's a weird-looking word. But,
I don't know, man. Your guess is as good as mine would be.
Yeah. Yeah, and so this molecule is needed for insulin receptors to work properly. And we've talked about insulin resistance a lot in the past, but this is one of the ways, you know, messing with dolichol, that you can become insulin resistant that is rarely discussed. Insulin resistance is never a good thing. You always want to be as insulin sensitive as possible. So keeping insulin low for our overall health is a good thing. That's what we really want. And maybe this is why statins increase your odds of developing diabetes. Are there papers on the website showing that? Yes, there are. And do you know one of the major drivers of heart disease? Yep, it's diabetes. 80% of diabetics die from heart disease. So how can giving a drug that increases insulin resistance and your odds of developing diabetes be prescribed under the guise of heart health? Makes no sense.
Yeah, it's really startling how closely those two diseases are linked. Like, if you have diabetes, you're going to have heart disease.
Yeah, like damn near 100%.
Or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And it just shows, man, all this stuff's connected. It's all, our body's all intimately connected, man. And just all, everything goes to whack when you take statins and when you mess with our body's ability to produce cholesterol and all these other various molecules. And yeah, so talking about that, let's not forget about the main thing statins are designed to block, and that's cholesterol. Cholesterol is so frequently damned that everyone just believes it's the most evil molecule that there's ever been. But cholesterol does so many things in our body, and if cholesterol or LDL, the dreaded bad cholesterol in quotes, was so bad and gave us heart disease so readily, evolution would have selected out LDL a long time ago. But since it obviously didn't, it must do some good things in our body. So we're going to go over a few of those things. And don't you agree with that evolution argument? Like, that seems pretty, like, black and white.
Oh, I mean, we talk about that all the time. Like, maybe survival of the fittest doesn't matter that much today, but 20,000 years ago, yeah, it mattered a lot. Like, if you were fat and sick, you would not be able to chase down an elephant or a deer and survive. Like, you would just die. So you wouldn't be able to pass on those shitty genetics. Like, that's basically how survival of the fittest works. If you're healthy, you're strong, you're able to pass down those genetics. If you're weak and sick, then you're going to die before you're able to pass on those genetics.
Yeah. So it's just, like, evolution rarely gets things wrong. And we've been evolving for a couple billion years. Like, our body and evolution has had a very long time to select out LDL and use something better to transport fat and nutrients around in our body, but it never did. Therefore, LDL is not some evil molecule. And really, like, the first thing I want to say is LDL isn't cholesterol per se. Like, LDL is just a lipoprotein. You could think of it basically like a taxi our body uses to shuttle around nutrients like cholesterol, like triglycerides, like fat-soluble vitamins. That's what LDL carries around. And one thing LDL does that is super relevant for today's world is it's a key part of a healthy immune system. LDL is able to bind to bacteria and viruses and neutralize them. And this is one of the reasons why people who have high LDL suffer from fewer infections compared to people with low LDL. And just a quick side note, what I thought about this week is any football fans out there probably know that Cam Newton, he's the quarterback of the Patriots, got COVID-19, I think maybe a few weeks ago now. He just played this week. And if you didn't know, he's been on a vegan diet for a while. I'm not exactly sure if he's been on a vegan diet still to this day. I think he is. If he's not, he hasn't come out and said anything about it. But it makes sense that someone not giving their body these nutrients would be more susceptible to getting COVID.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So no one talks about that, but that's just something I always think about when I hear this stuff. And
so the way I first learned about LDL and like how it's not cholesterol and kind of the way to look at it is like how you mentioned, like it's a taxi. Well, another way to look at it is it's a fire truck, and the damage in your arteries is the fire. So the LDL, it might increase if you have heart disease, but it's not the reason that you have heart disease. If there's a big fire going on, you're going to have a lot more fire trucks responding to that. So you have more fire trucks that can fight that fire. It's not causing that fire, it's fighting that fire.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think, say your little alien-like metaphor too, because that's a good one too.
So if you were an alien and you didn't understand that concept, every time you saw a fire truck. Well, there's one way you could look at it as, we just get all these fire trucks off the road because they're causing all these fires. Because you don't know that they're actually responding to the fire and not. And that's the way that our current like diet heart hypothesis, our statin recommendation, looks at heart disease. We see these two are connected, so we see LDL as causing heart disease when it's more likely vice versa. And like how Tyson just said, how LDL also is a part of our immune system. If you're coming down with the flu or something like that, your LDL may be elevated. So there's a lot of other things that can elevate your LDL other than having heart disease.
Yeah. Man, it's just, unfortunately, when the guidelines got started, again, check out last week's, you know, podcast in the 70s, they looked at it like an alien. They looked at those fire trucks and they're like, yo, get these fire trucks out of here, when they really should have said, what's really causing the fire? But they never asked those questions, or at least the people who did were never actually heard. And that's, you know, that's sad.
Yeah, there's a lot more nuance to this, to the human body, than a lot of people want to think. And they just try to simplify it as in things are good or bad. And it's like, no, everything is there for a reason. We have cholesterol for a reason. It's not good. It's not bad. It's, you know, it's essential.
It's essential. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so cholesterol plays a key role in structure and chemical stability of every cell in our body. It makes up 40% of every cellular membrane in our body and acts as an antioxidant, preventing and mopping up the damage done by free radicals. We talked about that with CoQ10 earlier. We need these antioxidants in our body to help with all that damage. Cholesterol is the backbone for for various hormones in our body, like testosterone, estrogen, and cortisol. We've talked about those all in the past. We need adequate amounts of cholesterol around to produce our hormones. Like, guys, do you want to lower your testosterone levels? I think not. That's never something you want to happen. Cholesterol is needed to make bile as well. Without adequate bile, we won't properly absorb fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K. So we need all this stuff to work together. Like, cholesterol has so many roles in our body. And there's a common misconception that dietary cholesterol, so the cholesterol you eat, is the same as the cholesterol in our blood. But these values are not connected at all. And that's been known since the beginning of this entire debacle. Ansel Keys, the star of last week's podcast, he's the author of the Diet Heart Hypothesis. He knew this himself. And he stated, this is a quote strictly from him, quote, Keys did multiples of these studies, changing the diets of his human guinea pigs, and he presented his conclusions in the Journal of Nutrition in November 1955. 1955, okay? Quote, it is concluded that in adult men, the blood cholesterol levels is essentially independent of the cholesterol intake over the whole range of natural human diets. It is probable that infants, children, and women are similar, end quote. And in 1997, Keys put this even more assertively, saying, there's no connection whatsoever between cholesterol in food and cholesterol in blood. And we've known that all along. Cholesterol in the diet doesn't matter at all unless you happen to be a chicken or a rabbit, end quote.
Yeah, basically, just to put it simply, the more cholesterol you eat, the less your body's going to make. The less you eat, the more your body's going to make. So, I mean, it's pretty, there's a lot of regulatory systems that go on in our body. So it has this.
Yeah, like our body knows exactly what to do. And you have all these people out there who avoid dietary cholesterol on purpose in order to lower their blood cholesterol values. And it's just so misguided. And I understand why they do it. Because logically, you know, they make that connection, and of course their doctors will tell them to do that, but it's just not how our body works. Like, I'm sorry, like, read a book. It's not how our body works. And yeah, like Tom said, we have our negative feedback loop. It's just, that's how our body really happens. And there's a huge study on heart disease, and I mentioned this before. Whenever I talk about cholesterol, I bring up this study called the Framingham Study. And Framingham is just a town in Massachusetts where this study is still happening to this day. So it started in 1948, and it's the longest running, most influential study in heart disease to ever take place. So this is the biggest, baddest study there is. And this is a quote pulled straight from this study, talking about cholesterol levels in the blood and how low cholesterol isn't good. So, quote, there is a direct association between falling cholesterol levels over the first 14 years and mortality over the following 18 years. Cardiovascular disease death rates increase per 1 milligram drop in cholesterol levels, end quote. So that pretty much means that as your cholesterol lowers, your chance of heart attacks and strokes increase.
I mean, that just goes against why anybody should ever prescribe statins.
I mean, and this isn't some, like, BS study. This is the biggest study on heart disease. I don't know, man. It's just, this information's out there. It is just suppressed, and it is, I don't know, I guess just not considered properly. You know, like, no one's making money off telling people to eat steak, but they're making a ton of money off prescribing statins.
I just don't know how you can look at that right there and still do it.
I know.
Still think. Yeah, still say, okay, cholesterol must be bad. I don't know how you can see that evidence and still prescribe a statin.
Yep.
I don't know. And like you said, like, this is the biggest study out there. Every cardiologist around knows about this study.
But they just think this conclusion doesn't fit their preconceived notion of cholesterol, therefore it must be wrong. And it's like, your preconceived conclusion is wrong.
It's another paradox.
Yeah, it's another paradox. Exactly. Yeah. And the funny thing is, the bulk of people who have heart attacks don't actually have high cholesterol. This is a study from the medical department at UCLA, and this is the largest study of cholesterol levels of heart patients, which, like, has ever been published. This is the biggest one. Again, not bullshit studies. These are the biggest ones out there. So a total of 137,000 patients from 541 hospitals in the U.S. had been admitted because of an acute heart attack. In all of them, their cholesterol was analyzed within the first 24 hours of admission. The authors found that their cholesterol was lower than normal. To be precise, their mean total cholesterol is 174, and the quote-unquote bad cholesterol, LDL, was also much lower than normal. 75% had normal LDL levels of 130 or lower. And all that study's on the website, so please check it out. Please print it out. Please bring it to your doctor and say, explain this. If LDL is so bad, explain this. And give them literally, there's probably 100 pages on this website by now, and see what they say. Because it's honestly undeniable. Okay, so let's take a look at Japan. I like bringing up Japan a lot because it's always brought up for being healthy and these quote-unquote blue zones where people live to a million years and like apparently never die. So let's see what's going on in Japan. In Japan, high cholesterol is associated with longer life at all ages. And this trend is true worldwide for elderly people. So here's a quote. Elderly people with the highest cholesterol levels have the highest survival rates irrespective of where they live in the world. End quote. So how crazy is that in the world? Like literally everywhere. If you're old, the higher the cholesterol, the better. It is protective against these chronic diseases. It is protective against the flu. It is protective against infections. Yet we're giving all these old folks statins saying, hey man, it's going to save you from heart attack, when it's really not. And this is another study from Switzerland. So this is about 3,000 people. And it found a 30% lower rate of all-cause mortality in people over 60 with high cholesterol. Again, just more proof that high cholesterol is being protective, is being beneficial. And this is a quote from that study, quote, compared to normal total cholesterol, high total cholesterol was associated with a decreased risk of all-cause mortality, end quote. And we've talked about this in the past, but all-cause mortality is what we really need to be looking at.
Yeah, I don't care what I die from if I'm going to die early. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm going to die early, I'd like to know, because, I mean, that's what matters most of all. If I'm given a drug that's going to prevent me from dying of heart disease, but I die from poisoning like the next day, that's not a drug I want to take.
Nope, exactly. And actually noteworthy from that study is that those who had high cholesterol but took cholesterol-lowering drugs, such as statins like we're talking about, had no survival advantage. So the cholesterol took that survival advantage away. And that's obviously because they're so damn poisoning to our body, and they prevent the production of all those other molecules we talked about earlier and the damage caused by those. So it makes sense that taking a statin, no matter your level of cholesterol, is going to be bad for you. And this is a study of 42 European nations looking at thousands of people, and they concluded that the relationship between raised cholesterol and coronary vascular disease is always negative. The higher the cholesterol, the lower the cardiovascular disease rates, end quote. So again, high cholesterol is protective against heart disease, which is the exact opposite of what most 90% of doctors are going to tell you. This is a quote explaining why high cholesterol might be beneficial for heart disease. So quote, the most likely explanation for these findings is that rather than promoting heart disease, high cholesterol may be protective, possibly through its beneficial influence on the immune system, end quote. And we've talked about this in the Industrial Seed Oil podcast, but a big part of plaque formation is the recruitment of our own immune system and something called foam cell formation, and high cholesterol can help limit that. So that can be one of the reasons how it can prevent so much plaque being built up. And high cholesterol also may protect against cancer. This has been shown through statin trials. Again, statins are designed to lower cholesterol. They're designed to prevent heart disease, but they cause all this other bad shit. And this is a quote from one of the statin studies. Quote, four controlled randomized statin trials have resulted in a statistically significant increase of cancer in the treatment group, and several case-controlled and cohort studies have also shown a significant risk of cancer associated with statins, end quote. Another study, in the first two simvastatin trials, 4S and HPS, cholesterol-lowering increased non-melanoma skin cancer, end quote. And actually, when statins first got developed, this article is linked on the website, one of the first like groups they tested statins on was dogs. And that's actually great. I really like it when we test. I mean, that sounds kind of shitty, but I really do like it when we test things on dogs, because from a GI standpoint and honestly a dietary standpoint, dogs run very similar to us. They're designed to eat a high-fat diet. Their GI tract looks damn near identical to ours. So I'd always rather studies be done on dogs than like rats, but it's just harder to do it on dogs, and it's not as politically correct. You know, I get that. You know, no one wants to kill whatever in their lab, but all these dogs, literally all of them, died of cancer in the very first like statin trial. And the doctors dismissed it because they're like, oh, there's no known mechanism for how statins can cause cancer. And I was like, oh, them being literally toxic to our mitochondria, like that's not like a fucking one-to-one like correlation. No, we can't look at that. No. And they said nope, dismissed it, and kept the trials going. Crazy.
But I mean, like, that seems pretty clear. Like, if you know that something's wrong and it causes damage, you really need to know the mechanism behind it.
They just totally dismissed it. Totally dismissed it.
So, like, I mean, that just kind of thinking logically, like, did they not believe that gravity existed until they, like, somebody, until Newton finally figured out, like, a mechanism behind it? Every time I throw something up, it comes back down. That's weird. They just thought, like, that's what humans thought for the longest time. They didn't believe that there was some force acting on it. Until Newton came up with his like gravity theory.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I know. But like logic and like simple thinking like completely goes out of the world or completely out of play when like this is, becomes a political like movement, which it became in the 70s. It all became political. And then once statins became involved, it became about money. And we all know once politics and money get involved, being true, being right does not matter. People are just saying, how can I manipulate this to make more money? And that's what they're doing.
Sad but true.
Yeah. So I'm not saying high cholesterol is always some like magical thing, you know, like if you're, you go in, your total cholesterol is 1200, like maybe figure something out, you know what I mean? Like take a deeper dive, get in hold of a good doctor and see what's going on, because your lipid system can get hijacked, and become deranged over years of bad eating and overall like sedentary lifestyle. The cholesterol rise is really a symptom of a bigger problem. It's not the problem itself. It's just your body saying, hey, shit's not going right. We got to switch this up. And that's a problem with statins. They treat the symptom. They don't actually treat the root cause. And we've talked about that a million times. That's just the healthcare industry in general. We are always treating the symptom, because if we actually cured people, every customer cured is a customer. I mean, every patient cured is a customer lost. And that's what happens when money gets involved. And everyone, the whole damn nation, is making money off the healthcare industry. You know, it's a big player.
Yeah, and unless you're treating the root cause, then that condition is never going to get better. It's only going to get worse. Like, if you're just trying to deal with the symptoms, it's like you have a leaky roof, so you just buy a bunch of buckets to catch the water while it's falling. When what you really need to do is go up on the roof and start patching those holes. So it's like, yeah, if you're just kind of dealing with the symptom, like, that's eventually it's going to catch up with you. There's no way that you're going to really treat and heal your body if all you're trying to do is just throw buckets on the ground instead of actually taking care of your leaky roof.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And so LDL and the overall marker is really a terrible marker for any sort of health measurement. I would not listen to it at all, especially for heart disease. But the best indicator to measure when talking about cholesterol and heart disease or heart health is your triglycerides to HDL ratio. And why is this? It's because your cholesterol ratios are a good indicator of insulin resistance. And that's going to be the real promoter or real cause of heart disease. And you want that ratio of cholesterol and, excuse me, of triglycerides to HDL to be around 2 maximum. Ideally, it's closer to 1-to-1. So an HDL of 60 and a triglycerides of 120, for example, if you're in that ballpark or better, that's a good thing. Ideally, your HDL is going to be about 80. Your triglycerides are going to be about 80. That's like golden. You're like, you're going to live forever. I don't care if your LDL is over 200 or 300 at that point. I don't care. If you're living a healthy lifestyle, you know you're eating, you know, whole food diet, you're exercising on occasion, and you come back with a HDL 80 and a triglycerides of 80, I really do not care what your LDL is. And that's, of course, that's my opinion. I'm not a doctor, but that's just anybody in my family that can't meet those numbers, I would say keep doing exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, most people that do follow a ketogenic diet do have elevated LDL. But, I mean, if you look at the rest of their measurements and look at heart disease, they're getting, like, great scores on everyone except for this one measurement. So it's probably there's something wrong with this measurement than all the other ones.
Yep, exactly. So measure your, I don't know, C-reactive protein, see what inflammation's like in your body. Measure HOMA-IR, which is going to be a measure of insulin resistance. Look at your, those are going to be harder to get. You're going to actually have to specifically ask for those tests. You're going to get HDL measurement. You're going to get triglyceride measurement no matter what, like, lipid panel you order or what doctor orders your lipid panel. It doesn't really matter. So those ones you can kind of just measure yourself. But, yeah, that's the gist of it. Like, statins are terrible. They literally slowly poison your body. They lower a vital nutrient in our body, a lipoprotein called LDL, which is often called bad cholesterol. It's not bad cholesterol. And there's just no good reason to take a statin. Like, I mentioned a few weeks back, I might talk about one good reason to take a statin. And it's not even a good reason, but there's been some, I don't know, indications that statins can kind of help lower inflammation. And we've talked about this a lot, like all the like modern diseases, think of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, all that type of stuff, they're associated with an increase in inflammation throughout our entire body. So of course, lowering inflammation is a good thing. But there's a mechanism that people, obviously the scientists didn't know when they initially created statins, but statins work, or at least somewhat work, on something called toll receptors in our gut. So just think you cross a bridge, you have to pay a toll, you have to drive through. It's pretty much a marker saying you passed this bridge. So we have the same thing in our gut. There's toll receptors that measure and kind of monitor what goes into our body through our gut. And of course, if you have a leaky gut, which the vast majority of people do, and a bunch of this shit's getting in our blood supply it's not supposed to, the toll receptors go off and say, hey, there's a problem here. That induces inflammation and your body tries to repair what's going on. But if it's constantly under attack, it's never going to keep up and it's constantly going to be inflamed. So once again, statins lower that. They kind of tell your toll receptors to shut up. That's not a good thing. The toll receptors are going off for a reason, but it will lower inflammation on kind of a roundabout type of way. Again, just treating the symptom, never actually curing what's going on. So that's one mechanism that people will talk about with statins and inflammation, but that's not a good reason to take a statin, in my opinion, you know?
And that's not why they're prescribing it. They're not measuring your inflammation levels, then prescribing a statin. You're looking at your LDL and then prescribing it. So it's not even like that's what the reason that they're prescribing it is because you're inflamed. And there are much better ways to deal with inflammation than this drug that causes a shit ton of side effects that we barely even got into today.
Yeah, exactly. So next week, we're going to go over the side effects of taking a statin. And I mean, you can just listen to this podcast and see where it's going to go. It's going to talk about heart disease. It's going to talk about diabetes. It's going to talk about cancer. It's going to talk about the biggest like three killers in our world today. And how statins increase your odds of getting those diseases. And I wanted that to be its own podcast and its own episode because I think it deserves it. So we'll go over that next week. And hope you guys learned something. Do you have anything else to say?
No, I think that's good.
I think that's good. Okay, yeah. So you can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe if you haven't already done so. You can find us pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.